Hi, I'm Richard Conte, and with me is Dr. John Carroll, who's Director of Interventional Cardiology and Professor of Medicine at the University of Colorado School of Medicine. John has been very active as an interventionalist and has participated on the steering committee as a member of the RESPECT trial on PFA closure for secondary prevention of initial cryptogenic stroke. Now, there are a couple of other trials out there that you're going to tell us about too, John, right? Why don't you tell us a little bit about what was RESPECT?
RESPECT was one of three trials that were recently reported that answered the question of what is the optimal strategy to prevent another stroke in people between the ages of 18 to 60 who present with a stroke, typically cortical, where the evaluation did not determine a specific mechanism for that stroke, so it was called cryptogenic, and they were also found to have a PFO, with the hypothesis being that their stroke might have been caused by a paradoxical embolism, and therefore device closure of the PFO would offer a means to prevent another stroke.
So you indicated that it might be due to passage of a clot from the leg to the brain.
And might be presumptive,
yeah,
because it's very, very rare to actually see an embolism move through a PFO. But that's the presumption.
Everybody had a stroke.
Everyone had stroke in RESPECT, and everyone was thoroughly evaluated by a neurologist to see if they had a specific mechanism of their stroke. None was found, and therefore they were labeled as cryptogenic. And cryptogenic strokes actually account for about a third of all ischemic strokes
in
adults. So it's a real problem. Why are these people having strokes? And certainly the patients often are otherwise healthy. As I said, they're relatively young. They're shocked to have had a stroke, and they're very concerned about doing something to prevent another stroke.
How about hypertension?
Yes, and so for these trials, people could enter if they had a history of hypertension, if it was under control, if there was no evidence that their stroke appeared to be related to hypertension. So people were certainly not included who had hemorrhagic strokes or lacunar strokes that could be due to small vessel disease from hypertension or diabetes.
So the patients who bled into the brain were excluded from these
Correct.
Trials. All right, tell us a little bit more.
Yes. So this has been a controversial area.
Mm-hmm.
It started off with the hypothesis that many people were having strokes that were related to paradoxical embolism. Early on, it was not thought to be a very large problem, and so the FDA actually approved two devices for PFO closure under the humanitarian device exemption, and where you don't have to prove in a randomized trial efficacy, but you have to show safety. And then all of a sudden, thousands and thousands of people started appearing who got closure. Some of them then went on to have off-label closure from devices approved for ASD closure. And the community said, well, we really need answers here. We need firm answers. And many in the neurology community thought that the device closure idea really didn't make much sense. And for them to support it, they wanted to see randomized clinical trial. And likewise, many of us in the interventional community who believed in evidence-based medicine said, we really have to start randomized trials to see whether this PFO closure is superior to medical therapy for secondary prevention of stroke.
Now, I assume that you do a lot of these closures personally.
Yes, I have.
Have you ever done one in somebody who never had a stroke but has a PFO?
No, I haven't. And, and I think that's one of the unanswered questions is what is the role of closure in primary prevention? But recall that 25 to 28% of the general adult population has a PFO. Secondly, population-based studies have not shown having a PFO by itself is really a stroke risk factor, as many other factors are. And so I think the assumption is, and what we were taught in medical school, was that a PFO, a patent foramen ovale, is an innocent remnant of the fetal circulation, and by itself is not a disease.
Well, I can tell you, I do not have a PFO. And I am one of the few people in the world who's done transseptals and had one done on him when I had an arrhythmia. I had an EP people did it.
Yes.
I'm sort of unique in that regard. But I know what transseptals are. And they're, you know, if you know what you're doing, they're really relatively easy. I mean, they're, so at any rate, okay, so that's the trial that you are on the steering committee.
Correct.
Okay. Now, what about the other trials? What did they tell us?
So there were two other trials. All three of these trials were published in September in the New England Journal of Medicine. The closed trial was a trial that originated by Professor Mas, a stroke neurologist in France, mainly with French centers, a few German centers. And it, too, randomized people to PFO closure with aspirin as concomitant therapy versus antiplatelet therapy, and had a third arm of full anticoagulation, and also required that the patients not have the kind of routine PFO, but actually have a PFO that had a large degree of right-to-left shunting or septum primum that moved around a lot, what we call an atrial septal aneurysm. So that was another of the trial. And the third trial was called the REDUCE trial, which was sponsored by device manufacturer Gore, and also had a randomized nature to it of antiplatelet therapy versus PFO closure plus antiplatelet therapy using the Gore devices.
Let me ask you this. Now, in these trials, obviously PFO closure was one of the arms.
Mm-hmm.
Did all of those PFO closures get antiplatelet therapy as well?
It was protocol mandated in both the REDUCE and the CLOSE trial. In the RESPECT trial, antiplatelet therapy was required post-procedure, but after 6 months, it was up to the discretion of the stroke neurologist caring for the patient whether they would continue on medical therapy or not. And also in RESPECT, the medical arm actually had four different choices of medical therapy following the then standing secondary prevention guidelines of the AHA and the American Stroke Association.
Okay, so the take-home message is what?
PFO closure is effective in reducing the rate of recurrent strokes more than antiplatelet therapy. That plays out in a small degree year by year. We're talking about recurrent stroke rates on a yearly basis of 1 to 1.5% in the medical arm being reduced half to 75% in the PFO closure. But that therapeutic effect accumulates over years such that it really becomes substantial. And of course, the average age of patients in these trials was in the mid-40s. And so what is very important is stroke prevention over a longer period of time, not just a few years. So all three showed a statistically significant, clinically relevant reduction of recurrent stroke rates by PFO closure versus antiplatelet therapy.
So I suggest that those who are interested in this subject, of which there should be plenty, should go and read these papers to make sure that they don't have any exclusionary criteria. Because that's one of the things you have to be careful about with any kind of trial, whether it be randomized or not. Who was excluded from the trial?
That's an excellent point, because this was a very highly defined group of patients. And for example, it did not answer the question of a 65 or a 70-year-old coming in having a cryptogenic stroke, whether PFO closure is of benefit to them. It did not answer the question of whether people who came in with a DVT and then had a stroke, what is the best management for them? So this is a focused population, and I think the indications that will now come out in guidelines will clearly differentiate what the trial included and whom they excluded.
And I think that's very important. It's a comment about guidelines. Guidelines are suggestions by persons who read the clinical trial, and then they develop the guidelines. So if you don't agree with the guideline writers, that's okay because you have a different interpretation of the clinical trial, but that's what it has to amount to. At any rate, I think we've covered this subject pretty well, and I think certainly if I had a cryptogenic stroke, I'd be considered a candidate for one of these clinical trials. So thank you very much for coming to Axel, and I've enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you, Dr. Conti.